great news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast,
are the Ordinary Pickball Podcast.
And now, the Warner Brothers, in a scene from Shakespeare's Hamlet. Translated for those viewers who, like Yakko, have no idea what he's talking about.
Alas, poor Yorick.
Whoa, check out Skullhead.
I knew him, Horatio. A fellow of infinite jest, of most excellent fancy.
He was funny.
He hath bore me on his back 1,000 times.
He gave me piggyback rides.
And now, how abhorred in my imagination it is. My gorge rises at it.
I'm going to blow chunks.
Now here comes your host, Kyle Abear, and all the world see you.
Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 87. We are part of thegeekmedia.com, a podcast dedicated to news on all things geeky, whether it's video games, cartoons, anime, comics, movies, tech, and other random infotainment. My name is Kyle Abear, a West Coast-based voice actor for video games and animation.
This is your co-host, Otherworld Steve. I'm a musician and up-and-coming author. As our listeners heard in the wonderful promo last week, Promo to the Void is currently working on some of the soundtrack material for the upcoming Magnum Forest feature. We're also, at the same time, working on our new album, our second album, our follow-up, if you will. We started with a piece that was performed by my son, Jonathan, whose birthday is actually mere days away, his first birthday. But we recorded a piece of him on keys on his little piano xylophone thing that's going to actually be part of the next album. So wanted to share that with our listeners. Going to go ahead and register him as an ASCAP member now, secure all his royalty rights.
Because we don't want the world downloading his creative works and keeping him from earning his college fund.
Right, because at a year old, you know, he needs all the money he can get.
So, anyhoozle, this show of the Big Ball Broadcast features lots of geeky news, such as our initial thoughts on Star Wars The Force Unleashed, which is inhabiting many folks' consoles, the various ones out there, even the iPhone. I have that version as well. We'll talk about that coming up. We got a little list of comic book snafus and recalls, and some of these comic books that were recalled are actually worth a little money. One that's even that has just hit some comic book shelves. And we're going to have more info on that. Speaking of more comic book news, Transformers 2 is not only hitting the big screen, but we'll get a prequel comic. We got details on that. Jon Favreau will be talking Iron Man's cinematic future. There's some more Marvel comic book movie news. Also, Warner Brothers, Dark Knight. It could be re-released. We'll tell you why, when, and all the how and the specifics. We've got a list of new geek-worthy DVDs just released. Sam Raimi and Tobey Maguire talking Spidey 4. And a little Ninja Turtle tidbit, too. All of this and God knows what else we'll cram-pack in here on this fine Big Ball Broadcast episode.
Couldn't have said it better than myself.
You sound like you're eating. What do you got there?
I have a nice greasy burger from a place that doesn't sponsor us, so I won't mention the name. But it goes to show you the time constraints we do this podcast under. I can't even eat dinner, you know, trying to crank out a podcast, so I do it for the love of the listeners.
And I'm sitting here drinking Coors Light beer.
I haven't drank alcohol during a podcast in a very long time. Get my bottle of Crown just outside of my reach. Maybe I'll grab it later and dump it in my generic cola drink here.
Because, you know, nothing goes better with a burger than Crown.
Yeah, why not?
Well, sit there and scarf down your burger. I'm going to go ahead and let's check the inbox at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. This is where we encourage listener feedback, even MP3 comments. First one comes from Sean Robinson of a anime podcast called ASO Radio. He says, "Name's Sean, NZ17 Robinson, and I run a Long in the Tooth, 1999. Whoa, that's a long time, dude. Podcast called ASO Radio. We'd be mighty happy if you have some promos for Triple B that we could play on our show. Of course, if you ever come out with another episode of BBB, it'd be mighty fine if you mentioned us too. Maybe you and we could even manage a link exchange. Anyway, whether you do or don't, I still think you do a bang-up job as a VA. Thanks for the good work bringing characters to life. Talk to you later." So hopefully if I remember, I'll stick the link in the show notes for ASO Radio. And might even play a promo from him, because I sent them ours. And that's how that works, the whole link exchange thing. If you host a podcast and would like it promoted on this show, all you have to do is send us your promo. We'll send you ours. Kind of podcasters scratching each other's back there. If you don't see this link in the show notes, get a pen and paper or get ready to type this URL in your browser right now. www.nz17.com/ ASO Radio/. So there you go. Check out that anime news podcast. And next up, Eduardo in Los Angeles sent us an MP3 comment.
Hey there, Kyle DeBear and Otherworld Steve at the Big Ball Broadcast. Name's Eduardo Aguirre, holding it down here in Los Angeles. Big fan of your show, though shamefully I do admit that I haven't been a long-time listener. Now I will be, though, so no worries. Plus, I go through the archives and fish out some old devs here and there. Quick shout-outs if I may. Kyle DeBear, I love your work that you do as a voice actor and all the insight that you give me within the show and out. Also, a huge congratulations on landing such an iconic character to voice. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know what I'm talking about, well then brace yourselves, because our very own Kyle here is voicing Ryu in the upcoming Street Fighter 4. So look forward to that. You know I will. Otherworld Steve, I also enjoy the insight that you put into the show, but I'm curious to hear some of the music that you create, since from previous episodes, I hear that you are a musician. So I ask you, where can I buy one of your CDs so that I not only can get to hear what I feel will be some kick-ass music, but you know, also give my thanks for your input in the Triple B. But yeah, basically I'm miking in my feedback since last episode you guys voiced on how you don't get any. Hopefully this one's being used as the first. Now then, a topic I want to bring to the table. Piracy is a big issue, but it's been covered. Instead, I want to know your opinions on sub versus dubs. The anime distributed here in the States are mostly dubbed, but as Kyle pointed out in the last episode, some companies penny pinch and release sub only. I recently became aware that the anime fanbase argues a great deal that dubs are better than subs, or vice versa. And with subs, yeah, they're great and all, but I don't want the distraction of reading and going back when I miss all the text dialogue or some of the scenes when I can hear it in the language for the States, made specifically for you and I as the viewers. Solution? Well, I say buy the dual audio DVDs if available, and take your preference, sub or dub, or turn them both on, you know? Have the dub, and turn on the subs, if it differs so much. It's the viewer's choice, so it really shouldn't be argued, you know? You're gonna like what you like, and they're gonna like what they like. So Kyle, Steve, what are your thoughts and opinions on the matter? I wanna know, and I'm sure some listeners do too. Well, thanks for allowing me to voice my feedback, and sorry if it went on for too long. Hopefully I'll chime in again soon. Until then, take care and keep doing what you guys do, because you guys do it so well. Peace.
All right. Thank you, Eduardo, for the MP3 comment. And we encourage everyone out there with a microphone and their laptop, just record their thoughts and send it to us at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. So first of all, yes, thank you. Yeah, I am going to be voicing Ryu on Street Fighter 4. I believe that's hitting in February of next year or March. It's coming early 2009. I'm pretty psyched about that. Steve, where can we hear more of your band? Because Eduardo here is a new listener to the show.
First of all, I got to throw out my congratulations for you landing Ryu in Street Fighter 4. Pretty badass credit there.
Thank you, sir.
Permanent of the Void. If you want to hear more, you can go to eberecords.com. We offer it in two formats, digital download and physical CD. If you order the CD, you get to download the album for free in MP3 format as a thank you from the band, and you'll get the CD in about a week in the mail. So I encourage you, highly encourage you to do so. And it's on the cheap. It's like, I think it's $5 for the CD and the download. Can't beat that.
So the whole subs versus dubs thing. Eduardo, I also agree that DVDs should have really solved that argument many, many years ago. I mean, we've been with DVD for over a decade now, and yet the arguments still persist. This otaku snob thing that goes on, and some otaku people would say that there are dub snobs too, and okay, that's fine. There are snobs on both sides of the fence. My whole take on it is, watch anime the way you want. Don't give the other side grief about it. And just remember that if you love anime, your money needs to support that industry to keep it going. Downloading fan subs does nothing to save the industry. And that's what I'm going to just say. If you like what you see when you download a show, the artist isn't getting a dime of that. So if you like the show, please remember to pick up the DVDs if it is available. If it's not available, then okay, it's a crazy conundrum. But it is a little kind of a wacky situation where there's a glut of anime out there that some companies aren't footing the tab to produce a dub. That takes time, it takes a lot of money, and they're putting out sub-only releases. And those titles are also just sitting on the shelves. But back to the basic thing, pick your language. Enjoy it for what it is, because if you're an anime creator, I don't think you would care as long as your story got out there.
I have like 15 different things I can say, and I'm trying to prioritize so I don't ramble for the next half hour. That's a good start. I was going to tell the very long, boring story about how I wouldn't be doing this podcast right now if it wasn't for listening to dubs. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, Becca and I were those classic otaku purists who only watched anime in Japanese, and DBZ was one of those that we just watched religiously in Japanese. The only time we had to watch it was during dinner time because of our hectic schedules, and it got to be a real pain in the ass to try to eat and read subtitles. So we finally caved in, switched over to the dub, and that's when I got really curious about who some of these dub actors were and how they were promoting themselves. And then I was doing some internet searches, and this moron named Kyle Hebert did an interview on the official Dragon Ball Z site by Funimation and was silly enough to drop his personal email address during the interview. So I emailed that moron, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Steve went on to create my website, which you can see at kylehebert.com. That last name is spelled H-E-B-E-R-T, not Herbert, but that's all linked on our Big Ball Broadcast thing because you actually stuck the template within that site. So, yay, Steve.
Yay.
What do you think about the whole sub versus dub thing? So you switched. You used to be a snob and...
It made life so much easier to be able to just, you know, focus on the show and be able to hear what the characters are saying. And of course, even with quote-unquote legit subs, if you're watching a DVD from professional dubbing company and they throw the subtitles in there in Japanese, I read on message boards later on, that's not what the dialogue really is, and sometimes they just simplify it or even Americanize some of the subs. So I have no problems watching the dubs. DVD does, I believe, solve it all. You know, like you said, pick your language. Doesn't matter. Just buy the DVDs. I really have to echo that sentiment there. Buy the DVDs because who knows how much longer anime is going to be around if the fans aren't supporting the product.
What possible ground is gained by gathering with this vocal minority online talking about how awful English acting is and, oh, the voices are terrible and the acting's so much better in Japanese? Why don't you put that frustration to work in other ways and make a valid argument instead of doing all that? I have no problem per se with a subtitled or watching raw things other than it's a personal preference of mine because I can't eat and watch subtitles at the same time. I would rather focus on watching the animation and understand in a language that I was raised in. And that's just me. And yes, of course, there are awful dubs. And I'm sorry, but not everything from Japan is gold. There's bad acting in Japanese. But a lot of fans will sit there and argue that, oh, the acting's better in Japanese, and yet they don't speak Japanese.
You know, I was going to say that, too, because I guarantee it's got to be somewhere around 98 to 99% of the otaku here in North America who adamantly declare what you just said. You know, oh, it's so much better in Japanese, the inflection, the dialogue, the story, blah, blah, blah. I'm betting 90, 99% of those people aren't masters of the Japanese language. You're reading the subtitles. You're relying on the subtitles to get the story. So as soon as you say, you know, well, the Japanese voice is better or the acting's better, bullshit.
And there you go. And of course, you're welcome to take us to task on this by dropping us an email or MP3 comment at thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. Anywho, we're going to get to the main content of the show here after this brief message from not one of our sponsors, but a cool promo anyway, nonetheless.
Brace yourselves for the third impact. This week in Geek returns to the airwaves of 90.1 FM Niagara's New Rock on Friday mornings from 9:30 to 10:30. Join Mike the Birdman Dodd, that's me, and the rest of the Twig crew for another action-packed season filled with news, trivia, and interviews from the world of geekdom, covering the latest in movies, video games, and technology. Visit thisweekingeek.net for more exclusive content. Friday mornings from 9:30 to 10:30 on Niagara's New Rock. Sponsored by Anime on Request, Niagara's largest anime store.
Welcome back to the Big Bald Broadcast. This is Otherworld Steve and Kyle Aber here to bring you the geekiest news that you can use. Is that a lighter I heard? Are you lighting up over there?
I lit up. I did it. Oh. I'm guilty.
All right. Well, I guess I'll continue slurping down my beer over here. I'll start off with a little list here of geek-worthy DVD releases that you can add to your collection now. Speed Racer. It bombed in the box office and with critics, but for those who said, I'm going to wait for the DVD, well, you don't have any arguments anymore, no more excuses, because it's out. It's also out on Blu-ray, and a lot of people are saying that the Blu-ray is absolutely spectacular looking. They didn't put lossless audio on there, so it's only a 5.1, which is fine for me. I actually picked it up, and I've watched about an hour of it. It's not that great, but it is pretty. The resolution is quite awesome. So it's if you want to see a very pretty, colorful Blu-ray, then I highly recommend Speed Racer. Story-wise, I don't know, I kind of felt it's a movie that didn't really need to be made.
It looks pretty seizure-inducing from what I've seen from the trailer, and that was quite enough for me.
Yeah, yeah, if you're epileptic, you're going to have to close your eyes the entire time, because this is like Dick Tracy on acid.
So if you had to compare it to Cloverfield, which one is more vomit-inducing?
Well, it depends on your sensitivity. I think Cloverfield works better on the small screen, because obviously you're not watching an 80-foot shaky cam. You're watching a 40-inch shaky cam, which is much more tolerable. So I would argue that while Speed Racer looks much better because it was created in CG and crisp, clear 1080p, that because of the fast cutting and all the colors and everything, that might make you hurl a little bit easier than Cloverfield, actually.
Nice. That's like such a critical review there.
Another one that I know, Steve, you're going to be adding to your collection, and I will eventually, one of these days when I'm old, because my to-do list is just too long to go through here. Avatar The Last Airbender Complete Book 3 is now available.
Got it today. Came in the mail via Amazon. Thank you very much. I know a lot of people listen to this podcast are anime fans. A lot of people argue, oh, it's an anime ripoff, blah, blah, blah. Let me tell you, it's such a wonderful story, and it's so captivating, all three seasons. And it's a storyline that really shines compared to a lot of the anime that's out. So don't dismiss it because you think it's an anime ripoff. It's actually a Chinese story, and it's incredible. I really can't say enough about that show. Plus, it's got Mark freaking Hamill, okay? What more do you need to hear?
It even has George Takei.
And the dead guy there, Mako, yeah. That's not disrespectful. I just forgot his name, but guy. That guy. Moving right along.
Speaking of anime, if you're an old school fan, I don't know, would you classify DBZ as old school at this point?
Oh, hell yeah. I consider that like antique.
Yeah, antique, but it's cleaned up and looks new. Funimation's remastered box sets continue with season 6 now available.
Oh, got that too, sitting on my shelf. DBZ is just one series I keep going back to.
Here's a movie I distinctly remember seeing in the theater here, and I think it's aged pretty well. Certainly a memorable performance from Michael Keaton. It's Beetlejuice, the 20th anniversary edition.
I'll pass on that. I don't think that one translates very well.
Death Note fans, I know there are a lot of Death Note fans out there. The live-action movie is now available. I believe there is a dub on there from the Canadian cast. So if you're interested in that, you can pick that one up. If you're a Star Trek fan, Alternate Realities is a 5-disc compilation of 20 totally bizarre episodes from all the various incarnations.
There's two types of people in this world. It's Elvis or the Beatles, it's PS3 or 360, and of course, you know, Star Wars and Star Trek. I haven't yet met a fan of both. You're either one or the other. And I think I've made it pretty clear on this podcast I'm a Star Wars fan, so I really don't give a rat's ass what's going on in the Trekkie universe.
Yeah, I grew up watching the old classic Trek, and then in the late 80s, starting in 87, I did get into Next Generation for a while. Then I lost interest after that. I am definitely a Star Wars fan. I have a Boba Fett tattoo on my left shoulder. There's a testament right there. Although neither of us can stomach Clone Wars. Go figure.
So let's just say I really don't want to pay to see Clone Wars. I'm actually looking forward to the airing of Clone Wars on Cartoon Network. The way they cut the trailer on the Cartoon Network website was really impressive. It was really like that action, suspenseful, dark, gritty, dirty type of thing I was expecting from this, and it's in no way like the kiddie cut, all the Ahsoka Padawan stuff that they cut for the trailer. So I'm pretty geared up to watching a Cartoon Network, and being free, what do you got to lose?
So while we're talking about Star Wars, the big Star Wars news is most console owners, whether it's Wii, PS3, Xbox, or PS2, or even the iPhone, Star Wars The Force Unleashed is the big buzz right now. And you and I both have copies of this, I believe, on Xbox, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, now I started out trying to get a PS3 version because you can't play people online. If you could, then I was going to go with the 360 version. I started with a PS3. I couldn't get audio for some weird reason. I own a 60 gig original, like a first wave PS3. And I checked, and nothing was muted or anything. Everything sounded great, but the PS3 game installs first when you first put it in, and something about it just knocked out the sound on the game. I even took it back, got a second copy of the game. Same thing happened. So I begged and pleaded with the GameStop guy to give me an Xbox 360 version instead. So I got that. And kudos to GameStop, too. I actually was one of the geeks in line for the midnight launch, and I got one of those exclusive Stormtrooper figures. So, yay, rah.
Hello, eBay.
Steve and I both played about the same amount. We just don't have a lot of time. So I think we're about like an hour into it. And let's start with your thoughts, Steve. What do you think so far about Force Unleashed?
Okay, this is what I think. I played the crap out of the demo on the PS3. And anybody familiar with the demo knows when you start off with your first upgrade is the super strong force push. And you start off with force lightning and choke and all that happy stuff. And the lightsaber impale. So I was kind of disappointed to put the game in and start off with very, very limited force powers. You don't have the lightning and the saber throw and things like that. So that kind of took me back a little bit. Getting to play as Vader on the first level was, all right. It wasn't what they built it up to be. After playing for about an hour, I found it started getting very repetitive, and it kind of lost a lot of its luster and appeal for me. And in the end, you know, I was expecting something on a God of War level and got something that I think is relatively mediocre. I'll probably play it through to the end, but after an hour, I'm really not as impressed as the hype machine built it up to be.
I think it's one of the more notable titles. You know, there's a lot of Star Wars games out there, and they all pretty much tend to disappoint, except for, like, Lego Star Wars, which is awesome. But with the technology involved here, getting to use Force Lightning and Force Push, that's really cool, but it is kind of a repetitive thing. It's not as I guess varied in the action involved as far as God of War is concerned. Something that's atypical for me, I'm actually kind of into the story. I'm interested to see how the story unfolds because this is like official Star Wars canon that takes place between episode 3 and 4 and kind of helps bridge it even more so than the prequel movie did. So I'm kind of looking forward to learning more about the apprentice and how he figures into this whole thing. And graphically, I was so blown away by Soul Calibur 4, you know, since the apprentice shows up in that and Yoda, the smoothness, you know, Capcom did such a bang-up job. And LucasArts, they did a nice job, but it's kind of chunky and clunky and it jitters a little bit and it's not quite as smooth as the Star Wars characters' appearances on Soul Calibur. So I'm a little let down in that. Repetitive, it's kind of like playing Dynasty Warriors. You can just kind of button mash and do everything. But it is a huge jump, finally, to be able to do this Force stuff. And that's where I think the endless replay value comes in, because one of the engines, one of the technology behind the game, doesn't let the same action play out the same exact way. It varies it up. So you're flinging, you know, Wookiees or Stormtroopers around, but it's never going to end exactly the same way. So I think there is some replay value there.
Yeah, what's really amazing about this game is that they're using these three different physics engines in harmony to bring you an experience that hasn't ever been available on any of the console systems, where, like you said, there's different physical effects all the time. You never play the game twice the same way. When you throw somebody through glass, the glass will always break differently depending on the angle of the trajectory, the speed, the mass of the object, etc., etc. That is very groundbreaking, and it's very satisfying for about 15 minutes. When you start playing through, you find yourself using your force abilities less and less and just relying on your lightsaber and just hacking and slashing to get through the level. I think that's where my relative disappointment is. I know, like, this is probably going to generate tons of negative emails to me saying I don't know what I'm talking about, but for a relatively casual gamer nowadays, because of my schedule, when I pick up a game, especially one so highly touted, and after about an hour, it just starts feeling kind of like a job more than a form of entertainment. Let's just say I just can't wait for God of War 3.
I could say that I think LucasArts didn't knock this out of the park. And again, like you said, the whole hype machine is behind it. I think it's good. I'd probably give it, like, you know, maybe 3 out of 4. It's more positive than negative. I think they did a good game here.
I don't know if anybody really goes by like what IGN has to say, but when I checked last night, they gave it like a 7.3. So, I mean, it's not bad. It just feels too average for something that should have been spectacular.
I'm going to try and play more. I know I'm hopelessly ADD when it comes to games. I never, ever, ever finish any title that I buy. I do like to play for, you know, a few levels and enjoy it and then move on to the next game. And, you know, being a Star Wars fan and liking this whole Darth Vader apprentice storyline, I think it's really intriguing. And I'm just looking forward to seeing how it plays out.
I'll play it to completion, but not for all the quote-unquote right reasons. I mean, yeah, there's a little interest for me about the story. If I really want to spoil it, let's go online and do a search. But speaking of online, there's tons of cheat codes for this game. Like, tons. But the developers were kind of slick because if you use a lot of these different passwords to access the cheats, it disables the save function of the game. So, you know, a little FU there, but at the same time, you get to have some fun. So I will complete the game once through without cheating, just to have that satisfaction of having gone through it and not having anything spoiled when I decided to go back and just totally cheat through it the second time.
And that's why all games have multiple save data points. You can, you know, have your one game save where it's you playing through all together without a cheat code, and then just open up another game slot and just play that with a cheat code, so nothing lost.
Right, and you get to unload a really true can of whoop-ass right from go.
Oh, yeah, I think there's one code. If you guys want to try lightsaber, just the word lightsaber spelled out, enter that in the cheat code thing. That will give you, that will unlock a pretty badass lightsaber.
This is about 15 different costume variations, too. As you're playing through the game normally, you can collect what they call holocron chips or holocron crystals or something like that.
Yep.
You can unlock a bunch of different costumes as well as different abilities and lightsabers. And then with the cheat codes, there's a bunch more costumes available, so it's pretty well-rounded as far as extras go.
Yep, sound design is awesome, of course, because they've got the whole Star Wars sound effects library at their disposal there, so the sound design is great. If you have a surround sound system, be prepared to be totally immersed in Star Wars. It sounds fantastic.
Yes, and that's something that Lucas has always had going for him. When it comes to the audio technology, it's always going to be the best of the best.
And I was really hoping that the graphics would be the best of the best, and that was a little bit of the letdown, too, on top of the repetitive gameplay.
The novelty wears off really quick.
Don't go spend $60. Rent it.
Make sure you really want to play this thing first. Oh, and of course, you know, you touched on it earlier. I've mentioned it in other podcasts. But just to be all-inclusive here, with the 360 and the PS3 versions, as far as we know right now, no online content. The only online accessibility is with the Wii, which I guess kind of makes sense, because everybody's envisioned since the Wii came out as using the Wiimote as a lightsaber. So to really push that notion to the gaming community, Lucas signed an exclusive agreement with Nintendo to have head-to-head matches online, where you can swing around your Wiimote to your heart's content. I found that really disappointing. I found it a really cheap cop-out for Lucas, really throwing that bone to Nintendo, because it just seems to me there's so much you could have made available with the PSN network and with Xbox Live Marketplace to just really add that extra element and depth to the game.
We'll have to wait and see what the sales numbers. I'm sure they're pretty strong. Maybe that'll help dictate what sort of downloadable content we get. What you can get some things right now, you know, the typical things on Xbox, like, you know, themes or gamer picks, gamer theme packs, picture packs, just the standard fare. Nothing of real significance yet. I'm hoping that'll change.
You know, I love nothing more than whooping your ass on Xbox Live. Seems that there's more X-Men spinoffs on the way and possibly a new Daredevil film. In an article at the Variety website, the trade touches on some possible projects the studio is in talks about, and though Fox has no plans for a major overhaul, the studio has scheduled a strategy meeting to assess the status of its superheroes, and on the agenda, Fox will mull the possibility of more X-Men spinoffs, including a young X-Men project, as well as a Deadpool movie based on the character played by Ryan Reynolds in Wolverine, and the studio is even considering reviving the Daredevil property. So, what do you think? Do you think Fox should move on with some of these ideas?
I'm thinking a lot of people weren't happy with the way X-Men 3 ended up. Although I am excited about Wolverine. I think it looks pretty awesome. And Deadpool in there. I just picked up the new Deadpool number 1 comic series. And that's a great read, by the way, for any Deadpool fans out there. It's great stuff. It's a really cool character. I'm interested to see what Ryan Reynolds does with that. As far as future spinoffs, there just comes a point where it's just too much. It's just oversaturation, you know? Like, Star Wars was once like this amazing universe, and now it's just become oversaturated, where there's 18 billion books and 18 billion toys and all these things where everywhere you go, there's just too much, too much, too much. There's too much to keep going. There's continuity to remember. And this is a problem in the comic book universe as well. Too many spin-off titles. How can you possibly keep up with that? That's my thing as a fan. How do you keep up?
Yeah, I hear Young X-Men, and I have these really warped thoughts of, like, X-Men 90210, full of teenage angst and relationship issues. It just doesn't scream out action film that I want to see.
Not so much. And I know that recently there was a new Avengers straight-to-DVD title that just came out with, you know, Kid Avengers of the Future. Young Avengers, I guess.
I guess that was minimally hyped because it didn't cross my radar.
Again, looking forward to Wolverine. Daredevil, I'm not sure that's a property worth revisiting.
To me, that just screams relaunch, which I'm not entirely against. You know, they kind of did that with the Punisher and with the Hulk franchise. I was hoping they'd do that with Spider-Man, but hey, you know, if they're looking to relaunch the Daredevil series, I might actually take it a little more serious this time. First one, Ben Affleck, nah. I wish I was the blind one.
No, you know, yeah, because even that had a spinoff, Elektra, and boy, was that good.
Marvel's answer to DC's Catwoman.
Well, of course, come September 30th, everyone and their dog is going to be grabbing a copy of the awesome Iron Man movie when it comes to DVD and Blu-ray. Meanwhile, director Jon Favreau talked to SuperheroHype.com, and some cool nuggets were disclosed. Of course, the main cast is all signed on. Favreau will be directing and also in front of the camera with a possibly expanded role as Happy Hogan. Robert Downey Jr. introduced Jon Favreau to fellow Tropic Thunder cohort Justin Theroux, and now Justin will be assisting Favreau in developing the sequel story. Now, the hardcore Iron Man fans know about the big nemesis in the Iron Man universe, the Asian crime lord, the Mandarin, whose 10 powerful ring weapons were referenced in the first film, a terrorist cell called the Ten Rings. And Mandarin may emerge as a primary antagonist. The challenge with that, however, Favreau thinks, is making the villain's mystical origins fit within the high-tech world established so well in the first film. It's also possible the Mandarin may not be fully revealed as the big bad until a possible third film to avoid overexposing a potentially intriguing enemy. Jon Favreau also plans to follow the first film's themes of integrating social and political themes into the adventure and fantasy, and he hinted at a current global situation, providing some inspiration, possibly an allusion to plans to utilize Iron Man's Russian counterpart, the Crimson Dynamo. And he's also impressed by use of IMAX footage in The Dark Knight recently, and is very open to including IMAX and or 3D sequences for the sequel. Now, the most well-known storyline from Iron Man, the series, the comic book series, is Demon in a Bottle, in which Stark becomes an alcoholic, and Rhodey takes over the role in Armor of Iron Man during Stark's recovery. These are expected to be included, possibly both in the second sequel. Rhodey's role in the first film was not as expansive as originally intended, and Favreau expects to rectify that. And he's also having designs developed for Rhodey's War Machine armor, and even more upgraded and tricked-out versions of Stark's suit may be utilized. So, in a nutshell, Iron Man's future looks really badass.
Well, I was on the phone with Favreau earlier, and he said, you know, although the fans are really excited and they want to see the sequel really soon, there's going to be a significant delay. And the reason for the delay is that he's trying to avoid overexposing the character, plus at the same time he's trying to figure out how to fit in its mystical elements in a real-world context. One really cool note, he went on to say that he does intend to include links to the likes of the Hulk and Captain America in the sequel, but unfortunately right now he's finding Thor a little too difficult to do so.
I would think so. Thor is not one I want to see on screen. I could just care less.
It's kind of weird when you go with this high-tech military action adventure and then you're going to, you know, introduce like Norse mythology. I really don't get the connection there, but now, maybe Favreau's thought this out, and it's good to avoid that.
I like his concern over overexposing the property, because then you run into the whole studio mentality where you're doing spinoffs, and you're doing more spinoffs of spinoffs, and then there's just oversaturation again.
Right, exactly. And I think that's something that certainly helped the Batman franchise. There was a significant wait between the two relaunch films, and it's probably going to be an even longer wait for the third, if there's going to be a third. I'm assuming, we're all assuming there's going to be, but I bet you're going to wait a while for it, because again, when you oversaturate a property, people become very numb to it very quickly. There's a famous saying in the entertainment industry that says, always leave them wanting more. So I think both Marvel and DC have looked at this approach, and it's probably the best way to really kill at the box office.
Yeah, but we also have to be cautious, because we both indexed this a few episodes ago. Warner Brothers wants to take the Dark Knight approach to all the future DC movie adaptations, and I'm kind of leery about that.
Right, and I'm also leery that not only is DC going to take the approach, but it's going to become the new norm in the comic to big screen adaptation genre. I think Marvel's also looking at the numbers from The Dark Knight, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's going to be some significant changes in upcoming Spider-Man and other franchise movies. Dateline Hollywood has said that director Sam Raimi and Tobey Maguire have apparently signed the dotted line for Spider-Man 4, which the studio was targeting for a May 2011 release. They said there's no deal for Kirsten Dunst just yet to return as Mary Jane Watson, but the character will be featured, and the studio will not recast her. As for the baddie in the fourth picture, they're saying right now that principal photography doesn't start until the fall of 2009, and once we find out who the villain is, we'll know who's playing it. Now, naturally, speculation would put Dylan Blaker's character as Dr. Kurt Connors / the Lizard in the headline, but right now, who knows? And the studio is trying to figure out still if it's feasible to shoot Spider-Man 4 and 5 together, because it's much more cost-effective to do it that way. But again, what we were talking about, oversaturation, if they do 4 or 5 back-to-back, they'll probably come out a year apart. And, of course, Marvel's still talking about the Spidey spinoff, Venom. This is a franchise I was really, 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 really hoping they were going to start from scratch, new cast, new director, bring something a lot more interesting to the franchise. Knowing it's not going to be that way, I'm not feeling that burning in my loins just yet. You know, might be surprised, might take some drastic steps to relaunch the franchise with the existing cast, but I'm just not feeling that, not even feeling any, like, really anticipation for it just yet. They're really going to have to sway me to go out and see this thing on the big screen.
Yeah, hopefully the studios will listen to the fan feedback to Spidey 3, which was not that much. Although the dollar signs would tell you differently, because it did probably, I think it made the most out of all three, right?
It did, actually. But one thing that's really made its rounds is, I guess you could say, the fact that it wasn't Raimi's choice to have two villains in the third film, that the studio really rammed it down his throat looking for really big box office numbers. I think if you left it to Venom alone versus Spidey, it probably would have been a much more kick-ass film, because nothing kills a franchise faster than just throwing in all kinds of villains. Look at the Batman franchise before the relaunch. So if you can have one villain in the film, and I think the Lizard's a really good call. They've had Dr. Connors in at least one of the films, two, I don't know if all three. I would just hate to see it get really dumbed down and just start throwing all kind of villains in. You know, it's almost like the villain of the week type scenario. It's going to be something a little longer lasting, something a little more titillating.
Speaking of being titillated, I am very titillated for Transformers 2 coming next summer to the big screen. Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. And of course, in typical fashion, we're going to get a prequel comic courtesy of IDW Publishing. It's called Transformers Destiny, and it's comprised of 2 4-part stories covering events leading up to the film. In the first chapter of the Destiny story arc, called Alliance, readers will learn more about what happened to Sector 7, what happened to the Autobots, and why their war on our planet is far from over. As for a hint as to what fans can look forward to on the big screen, co-producer Robert Orkey had this to say. Quote, you are going to find out a lot about the mythology. It's officially going to tell you what the Transformers history is, and I think a lot of it's going to be taken somewhat from gospel. I think we all settled on the fact that the source material and the myth that established in much of the Transformers backstory was perfect for this movie, and that should be satisfying to genuine fans. Unquote.
I still have not seen the first Transformers film. Totally my fault. I have it sitting here on DVD, not fancy Blu-ray or anything, but sitting here on DVD just begging to be viewed. And I haven't got that far yet. So I've been avoiding any Transformers 2 news like the plague. Although I wonder how poor Shia LaBeouf's doing with a smashed up hand.
Oh, they're gonna work it into the plot somehow. So they got around that real quick.
Damn. I mean, good. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle co-creator and owner Peter Laird has confirmed to MTV News that he is closer to a deal for a live-action CGI hybrid TMNT feature film. And he'd like to get TMNT voice actors Chris Evans and Sarah Michelle Gellar back, but this time in the flesh. I don't know about that.
I question bringing any more movies, period. I don't know if maybe I'm judging it too harshly. I never read the Ninja Turtles back in the heyday. I remember seeing it on, I remember seeing the comic book on the shelves and going, it just never grabbed me. And then the cartoon series came out, the original cartoon series. I'm like, still not grabbing me. And then, you know, the CG movie made some money. I watched a little of it. You know, kind of cool animation and everything. I don't know if it's really sparked enough interest in fandom to warrant further, especially another live action. I mean, they made 3 live action movies already.
Back in the 80s and the 90s, I was kind of the rebel in my circle where I read a lot of experimental, independent, low-budget comic books. 2 series that immediately leap to mind are Judge Dredd and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And the appeal of both of those properties is that they were incredibly dark and violent books for that time. They really kind of introduced that genre of not being part of the comic code and really pushing it to the envelope, pushing the envelope just totally out of the way. You had Ninja Turtles running around in Metallica t-shirts, cutting off dudes' heads, you know. That's pretty dark and disturbing stuff for the time. Judge Dredd get a crap-ass movie with Sylvester Stallone. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles got the kiddie treatment. And really cashed in, you know, especially in the late 80s, early 90s, really became a cash cow franchise. Again, the theme of the podcast totally oversaturated the market with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and all its different incarnations. But for some reason, the live-action series, the live-action movies, really took hold with a lot of the youth at that time, and I still read a lot of forum posts, different topics left here and there, about how much fun and exciting at least the first live-action movie was. To introduce live-action elements with CG elements sounds incredibly interesting. I'm just wondering how they're going to do it. Are the people in that world going to be real, and the Ninja Turtles and Shredder and Splinter are going to be all CG? The details are yet to be heard. Could be interesting. Could take also the really dark, brooding Dark Knight approach, which I don't even know how that would turn out with Ninja Turtles.
You said the comic originally was really dark, so, I mean, if they brought that approach, then it would at least be faithful to the source material for a change.
But again, I think it's just so ingrained now in pop culture that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles equals the youth dollar. I don't know if they'd want to push the envelope and exclude what is probably their largest cash cow to date. You know, they probably want all the McDonald's Happy Meal toys and different cereal toy associations and stuff. So I don't know how far they'll push it.
Well, that's true. I mean, if it were in Warner Brothers' hands, they'd definitely take the Dark Knight approach because look how much money that's made, and they didn't make a Happy Meal.
That's true. That is definitely true. A bunch of DVD tie-ins, though.
Even chocolate bars.
All right, speaking of Batman and total oversaturation, Warner Brothers is already planning a Dark Knight re-release. Now, Warner Brothers plans to re-release the blockbuster Dark Knight in January at the height of Academy Awards voter season, and this is according to The Hollywood Reporter. And it's just a matter of bringing it back as a reminder to the people, a source told the trade. Warner's domestic distribution president Dan Fellman acknowledged ongoing talks with IMAX executives about the prospect of restoring the film to some number of giant screen venues in January. It's uncertain if The Dark Knight will also appear in conventional theaters at that point. Now, to date, the film's earned about $513 million domestically and $440 million internationally, including more than $55 million in IMAX grosses. And the Blu-ray and DVD releases are expected to hit stores this December.
Here's the innate problem with their thinking here. It's going to be in every household, thanks to DVD and Blu-ray, just in time for Christmas. 1 month later, they want to re-release this thing in theaters? Good luck.
Well, I'm wondering, and, you know, I know, especially because of the environment you're in, you have the availability to see a lot of films both theatrically and in IMAX. With the DVD and Blu-ray coming out before Christmas, I wonder, like, for you, at least, is that enough for you to want to go and see it in IMAX? Or do you feel at that point, you've seen it in a theater, now you've seen it on DVD or Blu-ray, you're kind of full of it?
It's just a timing issue. I mean, of course I'd love to see Dark Knight again in IMAX. I think it'd be great, but you know, once you have the film in your collection and you've watched it over and over again, your thought is not to go rush right out to the theater that day or that week and see it when you have it already, you know, easily accessible at home with, you know, tons of all the extras and commentary tracks and whatnot. I understand why they want to do it, because they obviously want to go for the Oscar for Heath Ledger. And that's cool to see a genre film be pushed for the Oscar running. That's awesome. I mean, the last time we saw that happen was the third Lord of the Rings movie got Best Picture. That was incredible. That's really awesome. But I don't think that re-releasing it once it's hit video like that will necessarily prove to be too profitable.
Right. And I know this was a property very protected by Warner Brothers, and the last thing they wanted was this thing getting leaked online, and they fought really hard against a lot of the torrent sites, and they did claim a small victory. They had 48 hours of the theatrical release where it was exclusively a theatrical release. After the 48-hour period, it became, you know, again, saturated on the internet. So I can both agree with their reasoning for doing it, but I also agree with you that it doesn't just seem like something that's going to make people want to rush out to see it on the big screen again.
The typical thing the studios do will mail out those screener copies. And of course, that is the source of great piracy right there. These, you know, DVD or Blu-ray quality copies that make their way out, these screeners that go to members of the Academy for the voting purposes. And that's usually a great way to get leaked. But typically, those films are not out on DVD. And my point is, Dark Knight will already be out.
Right. What I'm saying is just that we're already pretty saturated with the Dark Knight, even prior to the DVD and Blu-ray release. I don't know. Again, maybe some people who haven't seen it in IMAX would want to go out just to have the IMAX experience, even if it made another $10 million in the IMAX theaters. That's pretty cool, I guess, especially with the overwhelming total this movie has so far. I'm pretty content having seen it once on the big screen. I will, of course, be picking it up on Blu-ray, but I think that's going to be about the end of my Dark Knight experience.
There you go, until we get the third film. Hopefully not Cher as Catwoman and all these outlandish rumors.
The studio themselves have already really pooed on a lot of those speculations, casting speculations right now, saying, you know, that there's nothing even signed saying there's going to be a new one. There's no scripts. There's really nothing concrete. So, and I guess the really big part of that is that Chris Nolan says himself that he doesn't cast until he has the script. So if we know for a fact that the script hasn't even been developed yet, we know Nolan hasn't even considered anybody for any roles. So for a long time, anything you read online is going to be strictly rumor.
That's right. So don't be too committed to seeing Johnny Depp as the Riddler.
You know, I thought about that for about 15 seconds, and I said, that could probably work. Johnny Depp is an incredible character actor, and he can really bring the characters that he portrays to a very believable status on the big screen. His performance in Edward Scissorhands versus, you know, Jack Sparrow in the Pirates of the Caribbean trilogy, they're really, you know, very left and right of each other. I could see him doing that, but then I wonder if he's just too high profile for the franchise.
There comes a point where the movie star's name is bigger than the character, and that takes you out of the film.
And we know that pretty much is the recipe that destroyed the Batman franchise and demanded the relaunch to begin with. In Batman and Robin, where you've got Arnold Schwarzenegger and Uma Thurman, you've got some really incredible actors, but in a universe that doesn't make sense to them, because you know they're just like relying on the name at that point. These people like Bat Who. I don't see Nolan going in that direction, actually. I actually have a lot of faith in the next film. So
I think the franchise is in good hands as long as they leave it to Chris Nolan.
And there's a lot of speculation where people say, well, you know, he really hasn't stumbled yet. And what if The Dark Knight is his Empire Strikes Back? You know, what if that's his peak? That's it. That's the best you're going to see from him. A lot of people feel they're going to be disappointed going into the third because, I mean, how do you really top a movie like Dark Knight? How do you top a performance like that of Heath Ledger, knowing that he can never come back and reprise that role? So as hungry as fans are, including myself, to see the next one, in the back of our heads, I think a lot of us are wondering, what can you do to make it on par, let alone even better?
We're going to round out this episode with a not top 10 list, but a top 8 list here of comic book snafus and recalls. This is courtesy of ChicagoTribune.com. We've got a list here of comic book titles that came out and due to various errors were quickly recalled. But the collector's market was able to swoop in, and actually some of these titles can fetch a pretty penny. Let's start off with the first one here on the list. If you were lucky enough to grab the number 10 issue of All-Star Batman and Robin, DC Comics just recalled this due to a printing error where Batgirl drops the F-bomb. So if you don't see one on the shelf, you're going to have to expect to spend upwards of $175 courtesy of eBay.
Yeah, she drops a lot more than just F-bombs in that issue, by the way. But another one is Elseworlds 80-page giant number one. And in that Kyle Barker and Liz Glassy story, Lolita Lerner, Superman's babysitter, the super toddler climbs into a microwave and drinks milk directly from a cow. And when Paul Levitz, the president of DC Comics, objected to the portrayal of the little Clark Kent, most issues were pulped, except for a few shipped to England. And current mint value was also around $175.
Okay, this next one, we talked about the bomb that was Elektra, but I think that's a Frank Miller creation too, right? Didn't he create that character?
I do believe so.
If you collected Volume 2, Number 3, back in November of 2001, this is Daredevil's off-again, on-again assassin girlfriend. She appeared partially nude in this issue, and that, of course, caused a recall. Current mint value, though, is only $18.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Volume 1, Number 5, June 2000, was also recalled. Alan Moore's collection of Victorian heroes weren't the controversy. The fake Victorian ads were. Parent company DC Comics recalled this because of an ad for an imaginary feminine hygiene product from a company called Marvel. Fearing legal retribution from Marvel Comics, the competitor company, DC, pulled the issue. The current mint value on that one is about $30.
Now, this next one here wasn't an error so much as it was bad timing. Let's go back, turn the time back to November 1963 for the 309th issue of Action Comics. In this story, President John F. Kennedy himself helps Superman retain his secret identity by posing as Clark Kent while Superman saves lives. Unfortunately, the issue hit stands the week after Kennedy's assassination, much to alarm of DC Comics. This current mint value is $135.
Wolverine's even seen some recall action here with Wolverine Volume 2, Number 131. Instead of the word killer, an anti-Semitic K-word made it into Wolverine's description of his arch-enemy Sabretooth, and current mint value is between $2.50 and $14.
Wait a minute, is Sabretooth Jewish?
News to me.
Next one on our list, Christian singer Amy Grant sued when Marvel Comics used her photo on the cover of the comic entitled Vampires on Broadway. Current mint value is a whopping $4.
And finally, a book that I actually have in my collection is Universe X Spidey, number one. This book was yanked when a hidden message to former Marvel editor Bob Harris was found in one panel. It read, in short, Harris, haha, he's gone. Good riddance to bad rubbish. He was a nasty SOB. And current mint value on this book, there's nothing official, but a recent eBay copy went for $35.
So did you know that?
I did, and that's why I ended up buying like two or three copies of that.
So did the news hit like that week when it came out, or how'd you hear about it?
Oh, yeah. Very similar to what we heard about the first book on this list. It was pretty much across the net's first day, which of course drove up demand immediately. The problem being, as time passes, interest wanes and the price tends to cool off quite a bit. So these $175 prices you're seeing on eBay right now, I'm sure you're going to see dip down to $50, $60 in a month's time.
I mean, I almost wanted to scramble to go down to my comic shop and say, do you have All-Star Batman and Robin number 10? It's like, yeah, get in line, buddy.
I've read quite a few of the scans of certain panels through websites like Dig and whatever, and as I said, it's a lot more than F-bombs. It's just swear-laden, left and right. For those of you not in the know, what DC did was they put black bars over the dialogue that contain the profanities, and in their quote-unquote printing error, the black bars are faint enough where you can read the underlying text, and it is entirely uncensored. The language is right out there for the world to see. Words I wouldn't even imagine saying, even in an R-rated podcast, especially coming out of Batgirl's mouth. It's insane.
Who wrote the script? Tarantino?
And this is a Comic Code approved book. I wonder what types of sanctions and fines or whatever DC stands to have to pay out in a case like that, where it's pretty much geared for all ages.
When they make and approve a final copy before it goes to press, can they not catch this before they've made all those copies? I mean, I assume an editor's job is to approve what goes out on the newsstand.
You know, I really have to recommend everybody over to this blog. It's something that I read religiously. It's Comic Book Resources, and they have a section called Comic Book Urgent Comic Book Urban Legends Revealed. It's an incredibly fascinating read. It's updated every Thursday night. And they touch on this topic extensively, where there was a guy, an artist from Marvel, I believe, who got kind of bored drawing all these panels over the course of a weekend and drew a character kind of like the Trix Bunny on a TV set in one of these panels, and he named the cereal Shit, S-H-I-T. And there's this big zoom-in of the rabbit on the TV holding up this box that says Shit on it, and it ended up making it to print. And he got yelled at by the editors at Marvel and whatever. And the first thing that came out of his mouth was, well, aren't there, like, editors? Aren't there people that, you know, proof this stuff before it goes out? So I wonder if this is a very small sampling of some of the stuff that got out, how much the artists and writers have actually tried that got stopped by the editors before it got out.
God knows, sometimes we try to slip in little bloopers into the track that gets submitted to like Cartoon Network when we're like dubbing various anime shows, and we've had to stop doing that because sometimes things get caught right before broadcast that is like, wait a minute, we found something dropped in, this is a mess up. Like, oh, you caught it, huh? Nice quality control.
Yeah, Kiba, bite me.
Yeah, so meanwhile, entire hard drives full of blackmail-worthy bloopers are still sitting there, but once in a while you try to throw a director off track or a producer to do a double take while they're listening to the show.
I remember about 5 or 6 years ago, there was this this infamous piece from Funimation that was a compilation of a bunch of different actors and some of the outtakes, and I'm sure that thing's long gone, but anybody privileged enough to hear it certainly heard one for the ages.
Good stuff. I wish this stuff would see the light of day, especially in the day of YouTube, where you see all manner of content uploaded on a daily basis. There's so much out there. Oh my gosh.
It's kind of ironic, even though being a very niche market, that you know, the police are on it, the Net Police, the company police, they make sure this stuff's kept very well under lock and key.
Okay, guys, well, we are fresh out of content. Thank you so much for downloading and listening to our podcast. Make sure and listen to Maria here on the end credits, who will tell you how to get in touch with our show. We encourage you to do so, including MP3 comments. Just take a microphone, record yourself, and send it to us. We'll play it on our next show.
And thanks to the listeners for some just really outrageous download numbers recently for the Big Ball Broadcast.
That's right. We finally broke the 200 mark.
Yes, on average right now, we have over 200 listeners a day, and Kyle and I are both ecstatic to see numbers like that. So keep spreading it word of mouth. Let your friends know. Give them the link. Pass it on an email, and let's see how far we can push those downloads.
Keep the feedback flowing, and until next time, this is Kyle Hebert.
And this is Otherworld Steve.
See ya!
Visit our official blog page at bigbaldbroadcast.blogspot.com. Donations are graciously accepted and appreciated. Please email us at thebigbaldbroadcast@gmail.com. Additional announcements by Maria Vu. Remember to stay geeky!
That was totally weird!